Well, I'm delighted now to turn to the other person in the studio with me, Megan O'Sullivan. She was formerly special assistant to President George W. Bush, including 2 years as deputy national security advisor for Iraq and Afghanistan. She's now a professor of international affairs at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government and an adjunct senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. So, hefty foreign policy credentials. And she says what's often overlooked as a major driver of foreign policy is also its most long-standing and consequential thing, energy. Working in government and in energy, she says, she saw very little intersection between the two worlds, and she writes in her new book that despite energy's huge impact on international affairs, its bearing on politics has, quote, never been less understood. And the new book is Windfall: How the New Energy Abundance Upends Global Politics and Strengthens America's Power. Megan O'Sullivan, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks very much. I'm happy to be here.
So at first blush, what you're saying in the book strikes me as totally counterintuitive, because I feel like we hear a lot of politicians always talk about energy and energy independence. So why are you not seeing, or haven't you seen, enough overlap between these issues then?
Sure. No, you're exactly right that the idea of energy independence is something that is very politically attractive in terms of rhetoric. But in terms of understanding what that actually means, what policies would be required to attain that, and even the big question of whether that would be desirable, and I argue in my book that's actually not even something that we should be coveting, that I think there's not enough understanding of how energy markets work. So I often think about it in terms of, as humans, we can only understand or incorporate so many explanatory variables when we're trying to look at any particular phenomenon. So we weight the things that we understand and we discount things that we don't understand. And so in the foreign policy world, you know, technical markets are not something that get a lot of weight.
Well, this seems very concerning, given the importance of these technical markets in just about every aspect of how our domestic economy functions. But in your book, though, you focus on how there's this boom in the U.S.'s energy supply, and that has had an effect on our global power projection.
Definitely. And so the argument is, as many Americans and many of your listeners are aware, over the last 10 years, we had what is really an unexpected boom in the production of oil and natural gas. And so we understand that has delivered economic benefits. But what I really focus on in my book is how that has delivered strategic benefits, because it's changed the environment in which the United States operates. And it's affected, you know, our friends and our adversaries, because not just the price of energy is lower, but also these markets work differently. So, say, Russia is at a disadvantage because of the way the markets are working.
Okay, so let's dig into the Russia example a little bit more deeply then, because, of course, Russia is on many, many people's minds now. I guess oil and gas, big exports for Russia. But how much did the United States even rely on them as an energy source? I thought it was more Europe that needed
Russian
oil and gas.
Right, and this kind of goes back to the beginning of our conversation, is that most Americans, when they think, okay, we have this oil and gas boom, and actually the U.S. has become an exporter of natural gas and of oil just in the last couple of years. And so people think, well, that must mean that we can muscle Russia out of Europe. You know, our exports can displace their exports. And so everybody looks for this kind of foreign policy cudgel. But in fact, the impact is more subtle, but pretty significant. In fact, the U.S. does not import Russian oil or natural gas. Where the difference is that our exporting of this commodity and the fact that we're no longer importing from other parts of the world mean that Russia has to deal with an environment where there's a lot more competition. Mm. And so, you know, its European markets for natural gas in particular are really important to them. And Russians have used that leverage for political purposes. You know, think about Ukraine, but we can also point to other examples. It's harder for them to do that in a world where there's a lot more options for Europe to meet their energy needs.
So then in that case, should the U.S. use this new leverage that it might have, counter leverage to Russian energy influence?
Right. So, you know, I focus a lot in the book as to what would be the optimal U.S. energy strategy if we're really trying to maximize this moment. So when I was in government, and many people before me, the whole idea was our energy situation made us vulnerable. Mm-hmm. It was a vulnerability. And now the Trump administration is the first administration to come in many, many decades that can say, hey, energy is actually an asset. And so the question is, okay, if that's true, and I believe it's true, what should we be doing to maximize this moment? The administration, I think, is overly focused just on production, mm-hmm. trying to figure out this. They have a concept of energy dominance, which seems to mean produce more oil and gas. And I say, sure, that might be part of it, but it needs to be a much bigger conversation. And it's one where we would think about, hey, our foreign policies that seem to have nothing to do with energy actually have a big impact on our energy situation at home.
But wouldn't this be, shouldn't this be within reach? I mean, the former CEO of Exxon is our current Secretary of State.
Right. I mean, you know, as I was saying, kind of the lens that I'm encouraging people to put on when they read the book is, you know, if you're trying to understand today's world, don't just think about it in terms of foreign policy and state-to-state relations and the United Nations and all that. You need to think about energy at the same time. So you think Rex Tillerson would be the embodiment of this, you know, a person who gets the global environment but also understands energy. You know, but thus far, I don't think we've seen him bring the weight of that to bear on our foreign policy. And there could be a lot of reasons for that. You know, my own theory is, you know, maybe he and other people from the corporate world kind of underestimate the complexity of foreign policy making. It looks, and I can speak as somebody who went in and went out, it looks a lot easier from the outside than when you actually get in there and have to deal with all the constituencies, everything that's already in place, the different actors, the different interests. It's pretty complicated. It's as complicated as energy markets.
Yeah. So this is really interesting regarding Russia. I'm also thinking now of Venezuela. The president has been talking a lot about Venezuela recently. How does that factor into what you write about America's power, given that we don't necessarily need Venezuelan oil?
Sure. We actually are one of Venezuela's largest export markets. So the Venezuela story right now, the tragedy that's unfolding there, is related to this boom that I'm talking about in the sense that the low oil prices of the last several years, in combination with economic mismanagement, have really invited the crisis, the humanitarian and financial crisis that the country is going through. And then there are all kinds of options for the United States and other countries to put more pressure on Venezuela by either deciding we're going to stop importing their oil, we're going to stop exporting refined petroleum products to them, or we're going to tell them you can't use dollars to actually facilitate your oil trade. Now, my argument is, you know, some people say the fact that we haven't done that suggests there's some kind of conspiracy theory that the U.S. really wants to keep Venezuelan President Maduro in power. My argument is a little bit different. We have those tools. We could bring that force to bear, but it may not be in our interest unless we have a good follow-on plan to the collapse of the Venezuelan regime. Mm. So you mentioned I worked on Iraq and Afghanistan. If we learned anything, we learned you can't just collapse a government and hope that good things come in the aftermath. You have to have a plan. And I don't see any evidence yet that we have a comprehensive plan that will help the Venezuelans deliver a better future after Maduro. So I think we have to look beyond just using energy sanctions, even though that could be part of the equation.
Interesting. So let's talk a little bit more about Iraq, because you have quite a deep experience and unique experience. You advised President George W. Bush on Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, given what we're talking about, wasn't energy and oil central to reasoning behind the second Iraq war, but to one of the things that pushed the United States into ousting Saddam Hussein?
Well, I do fully admit there's lots of linkages between Iraq and oil and our strategy and all of that. One thing, and I write about this in the book, is that the perception that we went to war over oil, which is common not just in the United States, but in Iraq and in the region, doesn't really stand up under scrutiny. Because if you think about it, there were many ways that the United States could have gotten access to Iraqi oil, well short of sending, you know, hundreds of thousands of troops and waging a war with all the risks involved. At the time of the invasion, which was 2003, Saddam was, you know, cutting deals with France, with Russia, with anyone he could that basically promised, you know, sweetheart deals on oil if a country would just agree to lift the sanctions that were in place against Saddam. So if that had been our objective, all we had to do was say, okay, we'll lift the sanctions, but in turn we want, you know, we want Exxon in there, we want Chevron, we want some kind of special deal. I mean, there's lots of ways in which if oil was our objective, there's a much easier way of getting control of it. But that said, you know, oil permeates Iraq's and Iraq's ability to survive, you know, both as a unified state, but also just in terms of its ability to meet the needs of its people. So I lived in Iraq for 2 years in total, and I spent a lot of time talking with Iraqis about energy, but it was mostly in the context of, you know, trying to protect it because it was the lifeline of their government. And the insurgency that we were battling, the Iraqis and the U.S. and other coalition partners, you know, knew that if they could take down oil infrastructure, that this would really hamper the viability of the government. So energy was something we thought about every day, but not in the sense of justifying why we were there.
Mm. Now, we just have a minute and a half here to go. The book is absolutely fascinating.
Thank you.
And I mean, but we're focusing on when we say energy abundance, we've been talking about fossil fuels. And I'm just wondering what you think of, because I personally believe that, you know, in for America's long-term global power, economic resilience, soft power leadership, whatever you want to call it, technological leadership, we can't have this conversation without thinking about clean sources of energy.
Sure. No. And I think as the book does make clear, it is largely about oil and natural gas because it's about geopolitics. And right now, virtually all of the international trade in energy is in fossil fuels. But I do acknowledge that renewables are really having a big disruptive presence in the power sector. And that I think that's going to continue. And that with that big change in the energy mix will come changes in politics. So I think that's, you know, maybe that's the next book I write. But it's definitely one of the things that I spend quite a bit of time talking to people about.
Isn't sort of a reverse version of that already
Definitely.
Happening because other nations may be speeding ahead on clean energy sources and becoming less reliant on U.S. exports?
Well, so far we haven't seen that yet, but it's certainly feasible.
Okay.
It's certainly feasible. And I make the argument in the book that actually our backing away from Paris and the climate agreement is not in our interest for lots of reasons, for the soft power that we lost, but also even if you're just narrowly focused on production of oil and gas, the fortunes of our natural gas exports are tied to whether or not big countries like China and India decide to move away from coal.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are lots of linkages here. And again, my big frame is basically saying, hey, when there's a big change in the world of energy, we should expect a big change in the world of politics. And we are going to be experiencing a new transition away from fossil fuels to more sustainable energy. And that will upend politics all over again.
I have to say, this is sort of more of a reaction than a question. Coming back to where we started, it's discomforting, actually, to hear someone with your deep expertise and knowledge say that you don't think that policymakers in the United States necessarily have the granular understanding of this relationship between big changes in geopolitics and big changes in global energy supplies. I mean, that doesn't fill me with confidence because those changes are coming.
They are coming. But again, these worlds, I mean, there are people who you know, I see this intersection, and I'm hopeful that there'll be more and more people. But if you think about it, if you ask most foreign policy practitioners, you know, what is going to shape the you know, global politics in the next 5 or 10 years, they're going to talk to you about Iran, they're going to talk to you about North Korea, they're going to talk to you about ISIS. They may not be cognizant of the fact that energy underpins all three of those issues, and that what's happening in this country is having a huge impact on all of those issues. So it's kind of like a first order issue. since we're in the wonking out hour.
Well, we have a book that we might suggest that they read now. Megan O'Sullivan, professor of international affairs at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. She was also director of Geopolitics of Energy, the Geopolitics of Energy Project between 2004 to 2007, and a former special assistant to President George W. Bush. The new book is Windfall: How the New Energy Abundance Upends Global Politics and Strengthens America's Power. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Meghna. Such a pleasure.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.